And I'm recording too. All right. Well, if everyone's ready, I will start the show. Oh, wait. I think my phone is not on mute. It was not on mute.
I'll put mine on mute.
Okay. Now I can start the show. Well, once Mueller's done playing video games on his phone.
No, I'm just checking my Blink camera. Some twat tried to steal my recycling bin today. She didn't have to get a shock when I spoke to her. I was in the front room and I saw it and I pushed the talk button and then leave my bin alone. And she looked up at the camera and yeah, you.
Yeah, Blink cameras are awesome.
I'm gonna have to show them. I meant to tell the missus about those last week. I think we're gonna have to get one for the front. This week we had a delivery coming from just the supermarket, and I was getting a bit worried because I hadn't got there in about 10 seconds for to answer the door to him. And if I'd had the camera, I could have just said to him, "Yeah, don't worry, I'll just be a minute." I had a voice from beyond appearing out from above his head, but that would do.
Yeah, totally works.
It's not always. If he's going to take 10 seconds, you ain't going to get, because it takes 10 seconds to tell you, then you have to put 10 seconds to, she was nicking my bin. She actually got it off. She actually dumped it 10 yards down the fucking road. Sorry about the line, we weren't recording yet, are we?
This will be part I got you and out. Chops off the beginning, since I haven't officially started the show.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right, I'm going to start the show. No more F-bombs. All right. Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I am Jeff Gamet, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And last week, I made a joke about how Ewan couldn't be with us because he's on his yacht. I'm not going to make that joke today. And it's because he's actually got his yacht docked at his private island. And he's lounging on the beach where he has people... cooling him with palm fronds, waving them, and bringing him Mai Tais and top shelf whiskeys, you know, as one does. So actually, just like last week, Ewan is still like insanely busy, and what a great problem for him to have. He is so busy with his business that he has to entrust the show to us. He is such a trusting man. I get why he trusts at least all of you, because you're an awesome panel, and I end up looking good simply because you're all so awesome that it just kind of reflects onto me too. So I do appreciate that. Mueller, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
You weren't expecting me to call on you first, were you?
No, I weren't. No, I was busy in my little world. Now, my cooker's packed up, my oven. So I've got to take half the kitchen apart to get it out. I've got to clear a pathway through the living room to the doorway to dump it on there, and then I've got to get the new one in. So I've got a busy weekend.
Sounds like it.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that we're not popping over to Mueller's for dinner this weekend.
Well, I've got one of those ninja cooker things. I think I mentioned that before. So I can do your dinner.
Yeah, but eating ninjas doesn't sound like a good idea. I mean, first, how would you even catch them?
You can't.
Easy enough. You've got this little trap. And it's a trap. And it's really good. And then you put the top on, and then you boil them for you pressure cooker them for a bit. They get ever so soft.
I'm pretty sure those aren't ninjas that you're catching, and they're just stupid people.
They may be just raccoons. I don't know.
Or raccoons.
Rats or raccoons.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Raccoons. I have plenty. Do you want me to send some over?
Oh God, they'll take you off like you of them in tree squirrels. The gray tree squirrels.
Raccoons are just awful. Absolutely awful. Yeah. but the complete opposite of awful, which is absolutely amazing and stunningly awesome, would be Patrice. How are you, Patrice?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing good. Today is one of those infamous Austrian public holidays. So I did do some little work today, but mostly I did a whole lot of nothing. So there's that.
That's absolutely fantastic. I am happy for you. Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Nice.
Yeah,
it was nice. The downside is everything is closed. I mean, everything was closed anyway because of COVID and so on. But the few things that would be open are closed today too. So, yeah, it's basically a lot of time and nowhere to go. And it was raining, so it wasn't even nice outside or anything. It was just raining. So
nice. There's a joke that's been going around the past week or so, which is totally accurate. But I think also kind of fitting where it's like the auto replies from people. Mm-hmm. If you're in Europe, the auto reply is, I'm out until September. Try messaging me after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And in the United States, it's, I'll be away from my desk for the next 2 hours getting emergency kidney surgery. You can reach me on my cell phone at any time.
Yeah, it is actually pretty accurate.
It is. Yeah. But, I'm so glad that I don't need emergency kidney surgery because,
that would be expensive.
That would be expensive. I'm in the United States. It would be horribly expensive. Yeah. I'm so glad you're getting to have a nice day off because that's exactly as it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I said I worked a little today, like an hour or so. Just, like, part of our teams are still working, so there were some emergencies, but it was an hour, so who cares?
Yeah, that's awesome. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. Tired today. It's been a busy week. Training, teaching classes this week, so it's busy, but it's all good. It's all good, really. It's a bit worn out tonight. So we'll chill, have a chat with you guys. That'd be a good way to break the time. Incidentally, if you want to know what Ewan's up to when he's not here, if you check on LinkedIn, I was just having a look, see if I could find him. Let's look Sentry. If you look for, is it Sentry Data Systems? I can't think what his business is called. He puts up footage and things of stuff he's been up to.
Oh, cool.
It is. Yeah, well, he does.
When you find the link, put it into the chat. So that,
I'm going to. I'm just doing that now. So it's interesting just to see what he gets. If you want to see what he gets up to, then you can have a look here. There we go. That was 3 months ago.
It's all technology. It's all technologies, if you want to know. AWE.
And it was something like that.
Nice.
But
there's a link to the sort of thing he gets up to. He's just been so incredibly busy. So, Ewan, we do miss you. We're looking forward to when you can come join us again and bring back a sense of professionalism to the show.
Yeah. Yeah, more than us.
Awesome. Okay. Who has the first story? I was going to say, Ian has it, but no, that's Ewan's.
Yeah, yeah. I do have one. We've been covering jetpacks, I've been covering jetpacks because I'm still a 5-year-old child at heart. I want jetpacks and flying cars, and I've got a good. There's a good thing there.
Well,
Patrice has beat me.
Patrice beat you. Yes,
we can talk space, and we can talk jetpacks first if you want.
No, I'll do space first.
I don't mind.
It's all fun.
It's all fun.
Yeah.
So, there's something going on in Congress right now. Or I would say it's politics in NASA because there was supposed to be two moon landers, two companies, two awards for moon landers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was 2 months ago or something, NASA came back and said, well, SpaceX has won because we only got so much budget and they're the cheapest. So instead of two, we're going to only have one because we don't have money for two. The other ones are one more expensive and we can't afford both. So there was a little politics going on, kind of. They were kind of saying, well, I mean, if you want to, you could give us more money, or you're okay with SpaceX doing it. Yeah, Congress is firing back now. There was an amendment to a bill from, I mean, conveniently, and that's kind of how it goes all the time. It's from a member from a state where, like, Jeff Bezos is, was it Blue Origin, I think? Yeah. Is located. I'm trying to find the person's name. Cantwell, I think. Yeah. There was an amendment to a big bill about science and like pushing forward American science, basically money. That there should be another $10 billion for a second lander, and it is going through. There was a little bit pushback from the Senate and from the committee saying, "Well, NASA should have done two landers." But they're actually, at least, I mean, if this goes through, like, if, you know, like politics, you never know. It might still get kicked out at some point, or like the bill never passes, or like there are a million reasons why this might not happen. But for now, NASA would get another, was it $10.3 billion, I think, dollars? Mm. Something like that. $10.03 billion. So
yeah.
Also a very precise number, $10.03 billion. It's not even 10, it's not 9 or 11. No, it's 10.03.
Well, that's how politics in the United States works.
Yeah. As said, like, I think, honestly, I mean, I don't like the whole like, oh, because it's from the state where like Blue Origin is, it's pushed part of it. But I mean, we can only win if NASA gets more money, right? So It's probably just the better idea anyway to have two landers just in case. Like, I mean, we've seen it with the commercial crew. It is, I mean, even though SpaceX so far is the only company that has actually done it, the others are coming. And I think it's just a safer bet. Like, instead of putting all your eggs in one basket and then hoping it happens, and hoping also it happens in budget, you have two. So if one of them, for whatever reason, can't deliver, or it takes 20 years to do so, you have a second one. So I think it's a better idea, but it's like the politics is interesting to say, well, we didn't get the money, so we're only going to pick one. It's like, okay.
Well, it turned out to be an interesting incentive to get the money for a second one.
Yeah. It's kind of how I think it was very, very smart from what's his name, Bridenstine, to say, well, you can have two if you give us some money.
Some money is $10 billion.
Mm-hmm. It's not cheap.
That's not an inconsiderable sum.
No, but given the like amount of money that is spent on like military spending in the US. For the entire budget, there, yeah. It's basically nothing. Like,
I like, if you look partway down the article, it goes for $10.03 billion, mm-hmm. precisely, not just $10 billion, but three. I don't want that extra $3 million. That'd be $3 million or 300,000.
30. That would be 30 million.
30 million.
Well, my guess is they know exactly how much. It's going to cost Blue Origin to build and deliver their landing craft, and it's $10.03 billion.
By the way, yeah, that's how it works. By the way, SpaceX's bid was $2.9 billion.
Yeah, I saw that. So
that's stunningly cheap for this sort of technology.
Yeah, I mean, you know how those contracts go usually, but that's independent thing. It doesn't even matter who does it. It usually goes over a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's extra money that has to be earmarked and so on. But I mean, SpaceX has shown that they can deliver, and that they can deliver usually for, let's put it in air quotes, cheap. It's not exactly cheap, but it's cheap comparatively. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
It is.
It's still nowhere near. Like the amount of money NASA is getting, even if they get the extra $10 billion, like as a percentage of the entire budget of the US, compared to what they were doing like back in the heydays in the like 60s, it's like, it's nowhere even close. Like NASA back then was getting way more of the entire budget than they're getting these days.
Yeah, it's amazing how small NASA's budget is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how much they can do with it. I mean, they're still sending probes everywhere, and I mean they're working on the James Webb Space Telescope and like Moon Lander and Mars, and
yeah, they're flying a test helicopter drone on Mars right now.
Yeah, that took 6 years to develop. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're still like giving. I mean, as I said, the budget isn't exactly small. Like, it's probably still bigger than like a lot of small countries in the world. Like the entire budget or the entire GDP is. But it's still not a lot.
Is this lander going to land people on the moon?
Yes, that's what it's for.
Mm-hmm. All right, not little robotic dogs.
no robot dogs. Well, I mean, I suppose they could take one with them.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. the way they're designing this, or these, potentially, I do find interesting. So instead of being a separate spacecraft that they have to pack along, it's the spacecraft that gets the crew from from Earth actually to the moon, and then they land the whole craft and then take off. So you eliminate the problem of, well, if we have two of these, how do we create a design so that we can pack the ship along? They don't need to worry about that now.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to remember is this is not okay. We have landers now, and we can like build an infinite amount of them. This is a limited project. It's basically just to build the initial landers. There will be more follow-up contracts in the future to build more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if everything works out and the plans continue as they're planned, where like they want to have like a kind of a permanent base on the moon, they're going to need more landers.
They're going to need a lot more landers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we're going to have
so this is
any sort of this is, physical this presence
is not,
there.
This is not the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not even, I think the first shot, they're not even doing the Lunar Gateway. They're going straight to the moon. The Gateway, I think, is going to come later.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's planned and the landers are supposed to work with the Gateway, but I think at the beginning, I mean, kind of makes sense if you think about it. They're going to the moon first, like establishing that connection again. And then, I mean, they will have to send the Gateway. So,
right.
That takes some time. Like it's not an immediate thing, and they can learn in the meantime, like how to go there, like with the new technology and everything. I mean, remember, we haven't been to, I mean, we, when I say we, I mean, NASA, we haven't been to the moon in like, what's that now? 70 years?
1971, I can't do math today. 71, yeah, I think, was the last Apollo mission.
So that would be 51 years? 50 years?
50 years.
Yeah. We haven't been, like I said, I think India or someone sent something recently. There've been some robots there, if I remember correctly.
India's robot crashed.
Oh, it's true, yeah.
China's robot did not.
Yeah, but I mean, they've still sent it. I mean, even if it crashed.
Yeah, they sent it.
They still sent it.
and speaking of China, I think their Mars rover is supposed to land this week.
Oh, it's true, yeah. That's true. Yeah, so it's going to be an exciting time. Like, so much to come. I mean, we all know that, what was it, 2024 timeframe for the lander? For the moon landing.
Right, which it's seems hold. crazy fast.
No. I mean, Elon Musk is saying they can do it, which means it's another 2-3 years from that.
Right. So is he going to build a Stargate on Earth and Stargate on the Moon, and we can just hop?
But it would be awesome if someone could invent the Stargate. It would be amazing. We would just send one to the Mars, yeah. to Mars, and then just Stargate there.
It would be so much more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. We can send some to like another system, like in the Milky Way, and just Stargate there when we're done.
That'll take a while.
Yeah. Like send it there. It takes, I don't know, 10, 15 years to get there. But when it's there,
15 years. Like
steps to the target.
Right.
It's not nearest, the nearest system. It's been like 40
four light years. Light years. 4 light years?
Right. But so if you send something that doesn't include people, then you can accelerate it a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
And get there
almost 1,000 miles a second.
Yeah. So instead of killing your people, trying to get them there in close to 4 years, mm-hmm. you can send something without people and get it up to a substantial fraction of the speed of light. And so let's say it's like 10 years.
Mm. Yeah. I think realistically they're saying 10 to 15 years to send something to,
any speeds that we can get to are going to kill people. It's not like yeah. Star Trek warping and everyone hits the back of the bulkhead. I'm going to say the acceleration that they can get to is quite gentle. And it's not the speed that kills you, it's the acceleration.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, acceleration and deceleration.
And breaking out of the Earth's atmosphere. I mean, that's the tricky bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is when mm-hmm. we get the thing like we have the space elevator and the other ideas people have had over the years. The thing where we have our space station hovering around the surface, and then we go up our space elevator and mm-hmm. join the, and then just pop into the thing, and that will then make space travel so much easier when we then have your Stargate set out there and we can just whiz off from the moon base Alpha.
Stargate would be Stargate would be awesome. That's like just put it somewhere
affected mm-hmm. by the wind.
there was someone talking about building a mile high elevator mm-hmm. thing at some point. I think we might have even covered it here. We talked about
the tallest buildings in the world are, I mean, not quite a mile high, but they're reaching.
Getting close.
Yeah, so.
but they don't stay upright.
But it's only 1 mile.
Mm.
We have to go much farther than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a building that tall, while it's really cool and exciting, at the same time, holy crap, that seems really scary.
And if you're going to build a space elevator, surely they'd have to be at the poles or on the equator.
Well, yeah.
You couldn't build them like well, you certainly wouldn't want to build them in the US with all the tectonic plates moving about.
I don't think that would matter as much.
Yeah, I mean, you can create a geocentric orbit that's
anywhere.
Yeah. It's just probably economically more feasible to do it at the equator or mm-hmm. or mm. close to the equator.
Or the poles. Yeah.
I mean, you need a lot of delta V
mm-hmm.
to move far enough up to have a geocentric orbit.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like gravity is still dragging it along, so I don't think that's the problem. The problem is to build something that holds. Like, I mean, just the amount of materials and then the forces on it.
Right.
I prefer Stargates. Just get a Stargate. Yeah,
Stargates would be easier. Like I said, and we sent one to Alpha Centauri and we just stepped through the Stargate and we're there. Like, that would be awesome. Mm.
Don't forget to get your vaccinations before you go. You don't want to get Centaurian flu.
Oh, it's true, yeah. But bring back some ale.
Yes. Yeah, bring back the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Or Pangalactic Gargle Blasters.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the, for those, you have to travel a little bit farther, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true, but it's so worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that you'd remember.
You'd never remember.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So a nice tie-in to that is Ian's piece.
Yeah, I've been covering jetpacks and things here for a while now because I'm a grown child that really finds all this madness cool. I've dropped a video in the chat if you want to take a look at that. There is a Royal Marine using a jetpack to travel across from the landing craft to a ship. These are the same ones we were looking at before that were being used for rescues and things on the in the Highlands of the UK, and he's using it from doing interboat transfers. How long before we have hovering soldiers coming out of the sky toward the bad guys? They pop in, and it's gonna be like Iron Man when they get this tech miniaturized. But it's brilliant. I mean, the guy who's doing it's really got really figured him out, and he's doing very well. I mean, considering there's a ship mobbing in the sea, coming from one of those little dinghies, and then he's landing it on the back of the. Quite comfortably on the back of there. I mean, that's Superman. That's space. That's flying stuff.
It is kind of cracking. Crazy
that's cracking to watch.
I mean, it looks like it shouldn't be possible.
It's actually on Savage Builds. There was a guy who invented those. I think it's exactly that guy. It was super interesting to see like how they work, and it's actually, I mean, it takes some practice, a lot of practice,
and serious upper body strength.
A guy called Richard Browning is the guy who invented them. There we go.
Yeah, it's not even about too much strength. It's about like precision and coordination, because you're basically. Like the power itself is relatively easy, because I mean you don't have to hold much. It pushes you up almost automatically. The problem is if you're not controlling it precisely, you're just going all over the place. It's kind of like he explained it like a tripod. Basically, it has the engine in the back and then the two on your arms basically, and you build basically a tripod, and that's how you can hover basically. And if you depending on how you move your arms basically, you can move back and forth because you're kind of changing the distribution. So it's like super fascinating, but like as Adam Savage showed, like it was very hard to learn. I mean, he learned it within like a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
But it was hard.
Yeah. That was quite
cool. Well, in the end, even though he learned how to fly the jetpack, when it came time to actually fly his Iron Man suit, he had the guy get into his suit and fly it for him.
Yeah, because he wasn't like, and he wasn't nowhere near ready to do that. But with enough practice, I think he would have been able to. Like, it just takes time. Like, it's like any other skill, it just takes time.
Yeah.
I still don't think these are practical, though. I mean, they're certainly not practical for combat. Cause, I mean, if you're flying
too big,
isn't it? It's not that if you're flying into a firefight, you've got no defense, and you're just open to attack. So I think it's a toy.
I think there are legitimate uses. I mean, there's rescue, for example, where it might be super helpful to get to people that you otherwise like through the terrain would be hard to get to, like here in the Alps, for example, where it's like sometimes very hard for helicopters to go anywhere. Because they can't get close enough to the people because of the downwinds and so on, or updrafts at mountain ranges. I can definitely see them in like police and military, and like for SWAT teams or whatever, like people that are rappelling down from helicopters right now. I could definitely see them coming in. I mean not for a stealth approach. I've heard that they're pretty loud.
They're not stealth. You've got no defense, and you've got no form of defense or attack. So if you're going to use it for anything, for ingressing a target, police, there's absolutely no way they'd use them, because you're basically leave yourself open.
But more open than like if any other way of ingress, like from the air, I'm not so sure about that.
Well, you could try the British way, which is to talk to people before you go firing guns at them. That is true.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the usual British way. That works best.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just bore them to death.
Yeah.
We don't go in there firing guns. We just go like talk to them so they get so bored they fall asleep and then you can just walk in and take the gun off them.
Yeah, but I said, like, in, I mean, what they were showing in like piracy on the oceans to get on like on other boats and so on. I said, I think you're right, it's dangerous and you probably need some form of protection, but it might be a useful tool like for certain situations.
Outside of trying to go to war, because I think Muller's probably right that you haven't got your hands free and you're a sitting target, they're floating in space, all of those kind of things. For rescue and transfer between boats and stuff, it looks like a great idea. Yeah. And particularly for rescue, for going up the sides of mountains. A couple of series I've been watching about sort of rescue type stuff. And when you see those, into my pick of the week now, but when you see things like those, you realise that, whoa, yes. There's just places you cannot get to easily, and that suddenly breaks down those barriers quite nicely, because it's not like you've got to try and get the whole size of a helicopter in, which is huge, which is a massive thing. A man with a couple of what looks like big bins on his arms is not going to really have a problem versus helicopter and all of the gubbins or even a 4x4 or a great big thing or anything else. It is quite a practical solution.
So what's he going to do? Land and then go, we'll be there in a minute where we can get develop a helicopter to get up here. Because I'm not being, how's he going to take them off? The jet blast will probably knock them off the mountain.
It's about getting treatment in. It's about getting treatment there.
Yeah, exactly. You can, like, exactly. A medic could easily go in, treat someone, and then, I mean, wait for the slower people to get to them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having a heart attack up the side of a mountain, you want to get someone to them as quickly as possible, or having a stroke. Time, these things are time critical. Having someone be able to jetpack up there makes a massive difference.
I suppose you could get the jetpack to take a Stargate up there and you could just beam them off.
That's an idea. Let's do that.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, if only.
It's a tool. Like, I think it's a tool that might be useful in some situations and probably completely useless in others. Just like a helicopter is not in all situations good. Like, it's just the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen helicopters do amazing things. So a seeking helicopter can go up a mountain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is. But I can tell you here, like, especially in Austria, like, it is sometimes really, really, really dangerous. And like the margins are like very slim.
Okay. You took a jetpack up an Austrian mountain in snow season, and then the jetpack starts an avalanche. I just see so many.
The helicopter could start an avalanche as well.
The chopper would.
Well, it could, yeah.
Yeah. It's not for everything, but I think it's a useful tool for certain situations.
I think for me, more than anything else, I just think it's an exciting idea of what's to come once that technology. I mean, we know everything else. I mean, look at sort of things we saw before. Once it gets miniaturized, once those things become a more practical thing, that it's just something on your sleeve almost that does the same proportion. You don't need as great big a lump of a thing. I don't know when that'll happen, mind you. But
yeah, I mean,
then that's or on your boots even. Yeah. Again, like Iron Man, then suddenly you've got a whole world of. Whole propulsion without the cumbersomeness of that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the video, I remember like the first prototypes like 10, 20 years ago, maybe. They were massive. Like they were, I mean, wasn't NASA even like checking whether they could use it, something like that? They were massive. Yeah, now it's like a big, I mean, it's kind of a backpack and some like little things on your arms. Like it's not huge.
That's true. It is a lot smaller than it was. And at some point, I could see where it changes so that you don't need to have the front jets mounted on your hands.
Maybe, or maybe you want them on your hands.
Or you want the pack like they had on the James Bond movie from years ago, the one where you hold on the things on your arms and off you go.
Yeah.
I'm all over jetpacks. It's the future. Flying cars, jetpacks. All that. I'm all over all that stuff.
The things we were promised as kids.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm all over that. I want those things. I still want to see these things in my lifetime. I don't want the next 100 years to be much like the last 100 years without no real sort of progress in the kind of transportation things, because they are mostly the same as what they were at the beginning of the last century, in a way, in terms of the mechanism. None of the mechanisms have changed. Flying is still the same. Regardless, it's much more comfortable than the Wright brothers did, but it's still flying. There's no difference in that mechanism. Benz's car is still the same. There's still two-wheeler at each corner, and it still propels me along. I mean, now we power it with electrons and not with burnt fossil fuels. It's now not a load of explosions going on under the bonnet. It's a battery, and it's electricity. But the principles are still there. I'm not hovering. Yeah. I've no maglev. Well, there's no functioning maglev thing. I'm not hovering.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't a hovering car just a helicopter?
Yeah, no, not really. It's not the same. That's different. We want hovering. I want hovering cars.
Patrice, I'm with you. That's pretty close.
I would say so.
Yeah, it's. I mean, what a lot of people visualize though is something more like Luke Skywalker's land speeder, where you don't have propellers lifting you. You have some unknown scientific force propelling you.
Until we discover anti-gravity, I think that might be a hard thing.
I think you're right.
Lithium crystals.
Yeah.
Need all those things.
All right, Mueller, you're up. What do you have for a story?
I've got three stories. What do you want? A neural implant, which would be as ridiculous what we're talking about today, Samsung or Microsoft?
Let's hear about Samsung today.
Okay. Well, I think that's quite a good story, actually, because I'll just put it in the chat. So Samsung are bringing a new chip with a GPU on it, which might actually challenge the M1 Max. So it's an ARM processor, Exynos ARM processor, with a built-in GPU, and it's due to launch probably next year. And it looks like it's going to be obviously low power, very powerful, and it's probably going to start challenging the Apple's M1. So it looks a tasty bit of kit, actually. I don't know what the price is going to be, because it's still pie in the sky, but it looks pretty cool. So if you look at it, it's an ARM GPU at, is it 2.9? So this
2.9 gigahertz.
I'm dubious about this, because if you look at the ARM CPUs on the even the mobile phone side, they're years behind Apple, so I don't think they're even close to the M1. Which, I mean, given, even if they're, like, I don't know, 50% there or 75% there, they would probably still beat out some of Intel's offerings. So,
completely. Yeah. I mean,
so it doesn't mean it's a bad device. I'm just saying it's probably not nowhere near close to M1.
But they get a competitor, which is a good thing.
That's awesome.
We want some competitiveness in this. So Windows, we can have Windows and ARM. I mean, that sounds great as far as, I mean, the Xenos processors have been around for some time, as far as I know. I mean, I'm sure I've had a mobile or two with them in the, of the Samsungs. They were always quite good. I mean, and they've had a lot of time in the ARM sphere in terms of developing that sort of hardware. So it sounds like it could be a good thing. It could be a good thing. We'll have to see. I mean, because let's face it, the M1s come out of Apple's development of the chips they stuck in their phones.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's just the growth of those. As says the man who's out using one of those ones right now and really still really enjoying it, by the way. It's probably a pucker machine, is the M1. Not been able to kill it yet. And it's still really, really good.
Yeah,
but this has got a GPU. This has got a GPU as well. So this is not only
exactly. Yeah,
well, not the same. It's not the same, is it? You're not going to be able to game on that. To the extent
that's
not
true.
Here's the problem, or one of the problems that I see for Samsung. If they want to compete head to head with the M1 chip with what they're doing here. And to be clear, I think it's awesome that this is happening because competition is good. But whatever Samsung is developing is going to be a chip that can be used by multiple types of devices, probably from multiple vendors, which creates the problem that Microsoft has always had, which is you have to develop for the lowest common denominator so that you have the greatest overall compatibility, where Apple doesn't have to do that. They can fine tune their hardware and their software to work together to get the best efficiency possible. So in that sense, Apple will have a leg up on Samsung. Still, I mean, the fact that Samsung is working on this, it's going to be a 5-nanometer chip. That's great. And I mean, there's a lot of good that I'm seeing in the specs here. And maybe something like this will push Microsoft to really ramp up their Windows on ARM efforts, because right now Windows on ARM is not something that we could just go out and buy.
Oh no, you can.
Oh, you can now.
You can't buy Windows separately, but if you bought one of those Samsung devices, it would probably come with Windows on ARM. And that's the point. That's the point I was going to make. The hardware doesn't matter. The hardware is right now the smallest part of it. The smartest part probably even of what Apple has done. I mean, the M1 is impressive, and it's like it's more than just a CPU and a GPU. It's a whole system around it. It's a whole development system. But it's even more. That's just a hardware thing. What Apple is doing on the software stack on top is honestly, I think, way more important than anything they're doing on the hardware. Because they can do, I mean, you see that? Do you see that even with the Intel Mac? Sometimes, like, I have some experience, like, with especially RAM management. We have stuff that we develop that needs a lot of RAM. And our Windows and Linux machines are constantly crashing because of it, because they're running out of RAM, and macOS can handle it with the same amount. So there is some stuff that Apple is doing to optimize the system itself, how they manage RAM, how they like swap and so on. That is something that Microsoft is not doing at all. Like the whole transition, like there's basically no, I mean, I said Windows on RAM on ARM exists. There's basically no software for it.
Right.
Like, Office is barely there.
Right.
And that's Microsoft's own stuff.
And what I was thinking about, we can't just go out and get Windows on ARM, is what you clarified. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. You can get it, but it's a device maker is going to get Windows for ARM from Microsoft, put it on the device. I can't go out and scratch build my own Windows on ARM machine and go buy that version of Windows from Microsoft.
You can download a preview though from Microsoft.
Windows on ARM.
There's an insider build you can grab if you want it.
Yeah, it's still not the same.
Yeah,
we can do that, but very few people can.
Yeah, I think this is going to go for the Linux community. They're going to go mad for this. Because imagine Linux community.
Oh yeah,
and obviously the gaming on Linux at the moment is taking off, particularly on Steam and a few other things. There was a story I could have brought about that, where Linux is actually going to start challenging, particularly with Google, with their Stadia, that's built on the same thing, same Linux background. So once Stadia takes off, Linux gaming will take off. And I think actually, if Microsoft aren't careful, they could find themselves sidetracked, on the back foot, on the gaming front, because I think Linux is going to, particularly with this, might start taking off. Because I think, and even, is it some of the gate, some of the GPU manufacturers now are starting to target Linux a lot more than Microsoft. So I tell you what, Linux is going to become a very exciting.
Is 2021 the year of Linux desktop?
Oh no, that's never going to happen. I'd like it to, but it's never going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. No, I mean, it is getting more popular. I'm not going to lie. Like, I've seen quite a few companies that are pushing, especially in the development sphere, that are saying, I mean, if it's not a Mac, then at least it's Linux, like as the development machine, because the stack is so close to what usually is deployed.
Yeah,
they're saying we prefer things to be on a Unix machine, either a Mac or a Linux. Like, if someone doesn't like a Mac for whatever reason, or like just prefers Linux, they go Linux. Like, our company is doing that. So I think it is getting more popular, but I don't think it's anywhere near like where it should be.
No, I know. I mean, there you go. I mean, that they're the links if anyone wants to grab themselves.
Yeah. We've been hearing for over a decade.
Yeah.
That Linux is about to really take off. Mm-hmm. And at some point it may actually do that. Now, I can see where Linux could be more popular in the gaming community, where you have a subset of users that really enjoy building their own gaming hardware anyhow. And so they would be more likely to embrace Linux, I'm assuming. Simply because they're more comfortable being under the hood anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
But as a true mainstream operating system, that's not happening.
There are much more friendlier distros now, though, aren't there?
Absolutely.
Linux Mint is quite... Sure. And the one, I can't remember, it's called, one with the exclamation mark, I can't remember it's called now. Pop is very, very game friendly. And I can see Pop and a few other these Mint building on this, because it's
still a fraction of a fraction of a fraction.
The Linux community is growing.
The Linux community is,
but it's still might really be growing.
It's tiny, and as I see more people moving to Macs than to Linux, and Linux would be an obvious choice if you're going that way.
If you're a gamer, you don't move to Mac. Mac gaming is
If you're a gamer, you're staying on Windows, or you're getting a game console. So let's be fair. How many serious gamers are out there? That's a small, minute percentage of everybody.
Oh, no, it's not.
No, it is.
Definitely drives the innovation in computing.
That doesn't mean that everybody out there who is even gaming is to that level that they're even building their own stuff. Like, sure, those people exist, and like it's not two or three people. Like, given the whole size of everything, there's probably, like, I don't know, 10 or 100,000 people. It's not a massive thing, because, like, I mean, even look at game consoles. Like, how many are sold? Sure, they're super popular, but not everybody who's buying a game console is going to buy a Linux machine and build their own machine and install everything and all of that. That's not everybody's going to do that. That's why I'm saying it is a fraction of a fraction. Doesn't mean that it's not, doesn't matter, but it also doesn't mean it's not a mainstream thing.
Is SteamOS still alive, or is that died now? Because that was a Linux-based
platform. No, it's still there. Yeah,
because that was like a Linux
for that.
Yeah, because it was like a Linux OS, wasn't it? And then it was basically a launchpad to all the content on Steam that ran on it.
Yeah, because I use Steam. I use Steam a lot. Steam runs on Pop as well, which is quite good. So you get all the games on Steam that run on Linux on Pop. You could get a little box as well, so you can play it on your TV.
Eventually like started giving them away essentially for the cost of shipping, just to get rid of them.
I don't know about that. They're still about. I mean, I haven't got one, but You get the Steam controller, which I think's got both in.
Yeah,
it's so it's basically you use their servers. So you know, it's a bit like, yet again, like Stadia. So you don't really need a powerful computer to run it. You don't need a powerful computer to run Linux. I run Linux on my PC over there. I dual boot.
Linux runs on your toaster.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, I have multiple Linux computers just scattered right over there because I have several Raspberry Pis.
Yeah,
I've got a Linux computer in here. It's in this little bag. I can open it.
I don't want to see what's in your sack, Muller.
That's my Linux computer.
Yeah, I said Linux is awesome, but it's not something that like most people will deal with.
If I can do it, anyone can.
That's true, but it doesn't mean that everyone's going to. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to give it to your sister or your grandmother or something?
No.
I would not give a Linux computer to my parents.
I think I would, because I could actually control it from here.
I think you must.
I would still go with a Mac.
Yeah, I would. If I wanted to remotely control my parents' computer, then I would have them buy a Mac. Oh, wait, I did.
Yes, that's what I did.
Yeah.
I gave my dad a Samsung tablet, and I can do that over the air as well.
Yeah, or dad. Dad is more like it.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't pay for a Mac. It's not going to pay for a Mac. He wouldn't use it enough anyway.
What I have told all of my family members is that if they want to have any level of computer support from me, meaning computer support at all, then they have to buy a Mac, period. And I do have a family member that bought a Windows laptop because it was cheaper and they had a problem. And we were at a big family dinner and they pull out this laptop. Hey, Jeff, help me with this. And I told them no. And there were a couple very tense moments. But in the end, this family member understood that they were on their own, that my boundary had been set and I was going to stick to it.
Hey, so, Jeff, do you flash in your Mac?
Yeah, well, you know, we all have to have boundaries. All right. Hey, my story. The CHIP project, or Project CHIP, which is a consortium to have yet another standard for smart home technology, is rebranded as Matter. And so that's not the whole story, though. The story is that now Matter compatible smart home Internet of Things devices are supposed to start rolling out by the end of this year. And we have Google and Alexa, and so I guess Amazon and Apple all on board with this, as well as I think Samsung is in on it and a couple other companies. If I were to go back and actually reread the article that I brought, I would be able to rattle off more names. So on one hand, I'm looking at this and thinking, great, we have a unified standard that all of the big players can tap into. And at the same time, I'm thinking, great, now we have yet another unified standard that even though all these companies say they're going to support, what sort of support would we really see?
Does it ever go anywhere?
Right. Yeah. Does it ever go anywhere? I mean, the versions of these platforms that seem to have staying power are the ones that are completely proprietary. You know, so going into HomeKit or hooking into the A Lady platform or being Google Home compatible. Of course, for those you tend to have, they tend to support both anyhow. But having a standard like this, I mean, I really like the concept and I'm not holding my breath for widespread adoption, but boy, I sure hope it happens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we need something like this. We need something like, I mean, the USB Alliance with all its flaws or W3C or something like that. I think we need a standard because there are too many competing systems right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are even wireless standards. If we start with that, there are so many different ones. I mean, from simple Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and so on over like to Zigbee and Z-Wave and like a million more. I mean, Thread is another one.
Yeah, Thread, yep. Mm.
Yeah, it's like there are too many competing standards and that makes it very, very hard. It makes it very hard for a consumer to decide what to buy. It makes it very hard to combine things together. Like, does your Philips Hue work with your, I don't know, Google Home stuff, for example? I mean, yes, it does, but it's not as clear for someone who doesn't know this stuff. Like, we know that. But most people are not sure about that. And it is necessary. The question, as Jeff said, is it going to last? I mean, ultimately, from what I see it, it's more a seal of approval to say, okay, these devices work together. That's all it is. It supports, like, under the hood, a lot of different technologies. So we'll have to see. Well, I mean,
Zigbee hubs are built into all the Amazon stuff. So, I mean... I don't see what the issue is.
The issue is still that most people don't know. Like, you don't know if you buy a Zigbee supported device, you don't know what it's going to work with and what it's not. I think a lot of people nowadays look at for like their favorite assistant and say, okay, if I want Google Assistant or Alexa, I'm going to go with whoever lists that in their specs.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I want HomeKit, I'm going to look at that. There are some manufacturers that have like two, three different versions of the same device, depending on which like system you want to support, which is crazy. Like, it's the exact same device, and one is for Alexa, one is for HomeKit, and one is for Google.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, like, even for me, it's sometimes hard on like on Amazon to find the right one because it's so easy to buy the one that is not supported in the system that you prefer. So I think this is necessary.
I find HomeKit very limiting. I've got one HomeKit thing, and it only works with Apple, and it's.
That's what HomeKit is. It only works with Apple platform.
I mean,
it's
Apple. It does work pretty well.
That's the problem.
No, that's not true. Like, I have all HomeKit. What? That's not true. But the thing is, it does not matter. All of them should be the same. It should not matter which one you do. I mean, ideally, you can even combine all of them together, and it doesn't matter. It should not matter from a consumer perspective. Like, sure, I mean, if you're all in on Apple, then HomeKit is probably a good solution for you, and it does work really well. I use it all day, every day. But that's not the point. The point is that as a consumer, it's hard to decide what works and what doesn't. And it's easy to buy the wrong thing.
The only problem I see with Philips Hue, you need the hub. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it doesn't work at all. When you get the third-party bulbs, and I've got a couple of those. I got Philips Hue as well, but the third-party bulbs just work with Amazon. They got Zigbee, and they just work.
Or they just do Wi-Fi. I like the Zigbee stuff. That's it. Yeah, I've bought a couple from the company is called Osram in Germany. I'm trying to remember what it's called in the US. It has a different name.
Osram in the UK.
Yeah, I think in the US it has a different name. Doesn't matter. Like, big bulb manufacturer, they just have, it's just Wi-Fi. Doesn't matter. Anything works. Or it's Bluetooth. Like, it just works. So, yeah, I think this is necessary. We'll see how effective it is. Or whether, I mean, right now, I think Apple, Amazon, Google, I think are in there.
They are. Samsung is with them as well. And I believe there are a few other companies.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say the biggest vendors at least are in. There is a chance, but it could also just be like, I don't know, one person in that company said, we should be there. So they sent him or her. And now Nothing ever comes out of it. That right. person leaves the company or whatever, and that's it.
This. Okay, so in the chat room, Bob Beach says that he has a Hive system and it works great with HomeKit and the A-Lady.
Perfect.
Which is great. And but it also shows part of the problem, which Patrice, you have brought up, which is that you don't know which platforms the device supports that you're buying, you know, unless you go and look at all the specs. And it would be nice to know that you could buy something, whatever it is, and that it's just going to work with whatever platform you choose to use it on.
Yeah, you look for, I mean, I think that's the idea of this. You look for the matter seal. And anything you buy, any platform you use, it's going to work. That's the idea.
I mean, that does sound a bit more appreciative. I mean, because I have no idea when it comes to a lot of the this kind of sort of HomeKit and Alexa and things. I mean, I keep saying I need to get some of this thing, but I kind of avoid it. The only thing I've got is Casa running on a thing down below where I'm sitting here now. It turns my radiator on to make my room warm when I come down here to work during the day. And that's it at the minute. I keep saying I'm going to get more of the home automation-y type stuff, but and at least having some kind of standard would make it a little bit easier to kind of work out.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I have a lot of smart home devices.
Me too.
Like a stupid number of them. And everyone that I've bought, I've had to make a strategic decision about which platforms I'm going to use it on. You know, and so in some cases, I've had to buy a device that does what I want, but it wasn't exactly the one that I wanted, because it doesn't support the specific platforms that that I'm going to be using it with.
Same. I mean, I'm all in on HomeKit. Like, I've tried the others, and I preferred HomeKit. But yeah, you have to be very strategic. I mean, basically, my entire apartment is controlled. Like, I have door lock. I have like all the lights here. My coffee machine. I mean, I have all the HomePods and so on. I have a lot of devices and they all work really well. And like everything's controlled. Like the lights go on at certain times in the morning. I turn on everything like with one command. It works really well. But yeah, I still had to do a lot of research to find the right device.
Yeah. You and I did the sort of research that a lot of people have no interest in doing or wouldn't realize they need to do. And then they would have the frustration of buying something that doesn't actually work for them.
Yeah, or wouldn't understand and say, I mean, they read the specs and they're like, I don't know what all of this means. Like, what is Zigbee? Never heard of it.
Right.
And well, it's a very common standard.
It might be, but it's not everywhere. And nobody has heard about it. Like, Zigbee is not well known.
Yeah, I'd say that despite Zigbee's wide acceptance, the number of people that actually know what that is in the consumer space is just very minimal. And they wouldn't even know what it is that they need to buy to be able to use a Zigbee device or Zigbee compatible device.
Yeah. I mean, one example in the US, I had a garage door opener, big company, MyQ. It was very, I mean, I think they work with a lot of Chamberlain devices. It was very hard to get that to connect to any kind of HomeKit or any kind of home automation system. Because you needed another device and then you basically needed a computer science degree to set it up. Like no normal person would be able to do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was impossible to find any information that you even needed that second device.
Right. Yeah. So. And looking at Zigbee again. Okay. So an Echo can have a Zigbee hub built into it. Most people aren't going to have a clue how to use that. A Hue Bridge, that's Zigbee. Okay, so you can potentially run other Zigbee compatible devices through your Hue Bridge. But how many people actually know how to do that?
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, there's Z-Wave, there's so many standard.
That's what annoyed me about the Hue. You had to have the bridge. So I bought a Hue light.
I still hate it.
And I thought, that it'll work through my Zigbee bridge on the A-Lady, and it never. I had to get a bridge for it, another £30.
Mm-hmm. See, there you go.
That's the problem with that's Hue though, because I got another light which just works off. Can't remember the standard now. I can look it up, but that just works with A-Lady straight up. You have to download the app. Once you download the app, A-Lady sees it straight away.
Yeah, I mean that's the other problem. There are so many devices with really crappy apps. Mm-hmm. I mean, luckily enough, most of the time you don't have to actually. Like, you set it up and then you never have to use the app again. but that's another problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, the Philips Hue app, I think is crap.
Oh yeah, the Philips Hue app is absolutely crap.
Yeah, I mean, good thing you don't need it. Like, you just set it up once with your favorite home system, and then you're done. Like,
right? Yeah, and then you do everything through your home, whatever smart home system you're using. Yep. And the only time I deal with the Hue app now is when I want to go in and check and see if there's software updates for the bridge or the bulbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's the only time you need it. But I think that's why we need more standardization. We do need a common system, because there is so much great hardware out there, but it's very difficult to find.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean the Wirecutter, for example, is helping a lot with that. To be honest, or is it now New York Times? I think they're
Wirecutter still. It's Wirecutter branded, but it's part of the New York Times.
Yeah, so they're helping with that. But as I said, you still need some like our level of technical expertise to even read that.
That's true. And how many people even know to go look at Wirecutter articles?
No, they call us.
And then we send them a link to a Wirecutter article.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, this show and all the others on British Tech Network are sponsored by TSO Hosts. And that's absolutely awesome, because that means we have the bandwidth to stream shows to you like this and for you to watch or listen to the recordings later on. So having that bandwidth and the storage space for all this content is absolutely wonderful. And without their generosity, we simply would not be here, because there would be no way to be able to handle that bandwidth and storage space without them helping us out. So thank you to TSO Hosts for that. If you need to have a domain name or some hosting of your own, they are happy to help you out. They will even give you a discount for being a BTN fan. And what they're asking from us right now is that we give them some online love. So head over to your favorite social network and give them a shout out and thank them for being here supporting BTN. And just give them that shout out on whatever your favorite social network is. And so thank you to TSO Hosts for being here for us every single week. Also, thank you to Imend Max. They are helping out as well, making sure that we can be here every single week. If you have a Mac or an iPhone or an iPad, basically something with an Apple logo on it that needs to be fixed, take it over to Imend Max, and they're going to figure out what's wrong and fix the thing that's wrong instead of throwing out logic boards and just replacing them and seeing if that fixes the problem. And they also sell and lease equipment. So if you're looking for new or used gear, hit them up. They will take care of you for that. Mention BTN and you will get a discount, which is awesome. So thank you for that. And one of these days, I'm going to find an excuse and a reasonable way to pop on over to the UK from the US and bring along a couple iPads that I have that need new batteries. And I'm going to let Callum swap out my batteries for me. And I'm looking forward to that on many levels, not just simply because I'll have more than, say, 2 hours usage on an iPad before I have to plug it in, but because I'll get to hang out with everyone else as well. So thank you to Imend Max, And it is now time for the cool thing. But before we do that, Patrice, since I failed miserably at telling everyone how to get to the chat room when you weren't here, can you please bail me out and tell people how to get to the chat room?
Of course I can. It's super easy. Take your browser of choice, whatever that is, point it to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and then navigate to the 13th of May, 2021. And there you will find all the links and everything we talked about, all the comments from Bob Beach and so on. As always, don't click on any links that Motorbiker has posted. It's just safer that way.
It's much safer that way. Well, speaking of safer that way and potentially having a cool thing where we all think, seriously? What's... Oh, no, wait, that's Greeny that gives us cool things where we sit back and go, seriously? Muller, what's your cool thing?
Point three this week. It's drunk women solving crime. It's available on Apple if you want it.
Nice.
Have you listened to it then? It's absolutely hilarious. If you're sensitive of ears for profanity, probably best not listen. But you won't learn anything. I mean, they do touch on historical things, but shall we say that accuracy is not their forte. But what you will do is laugh, laugh, laugh. That's it, really. Enjoy it.
Drunk it's women a really fun
solving
show.
Crime. Yeah. It is actually, yeah.
That sounds cool. I mean, I might have to add that to the podcast.
Oh, you definitely got to go back. I'll send you a link later to one that was particularly the woman in the middle, Caitlin Wilkin. She's married to somebody that Ewan doesn't like. What's his name? Hold on, I'll just get his name up on the pod. I've got his other podcast that Ewan absolutely hates him. Richard Herring. She's married to Richard Herring.
Oh, right. Oh, him. Yes, I know him. Yeah, he's an old bed.
Yeah. Ewan absolutely hates him for some reason. I don't know why. But she's married to him. And so you can guess what her level of humour is then.
Fairly sweary as well, then, I bet.
Oh, gosh, yes. She certainly brings the tone down, if you know what I mean. But it is one of those podcasts that if you're in a good mood and want to laugh, have a listen.
I did.
And I'll try and find the one that she got really out of hand. And I think she actually said later on another podcast that she regretted it. But I was absolutely killing myself laughing.
It's an awesome podcast to go along with that one. If you enjoy Drunk Women Solving Murders, check out My Favorite Murder. It's two women.
Oh, is that the one?
It's a US podcast, and it's two women that are both comedians and will oftentimes have a drink or three while they're regaling each other with whichever murder of the week they have found. And it's a very
okay,
fun
okay, that
too.
Sounds fun. That's added as well. Yeah. Something else to listen to.
I'm doing good.
You're sorting me out for things to listen to. I can't complain. I've got the to link back to a previous cool thing in Butlers, I've got and I haven't started listening to it yet. I've just got on Libby the book by Portillo, Paxman to have a listen to.
That's yeah, really good. So enjoy that.
Okay, Patrice, what's your British cool thing?
Okay, my cool thing is kind of a two-parter. I have a public service announcement. I think it's important for everybody to know how to do that and to do that. Instagram has added pronouns to their profile. So if you go into the app, into your profile, there's a field for that now. And I think we should make this a normal thing that it's just everywhere. So you don't have to assume anything. So if you haven't done that yet and you have an Instagram profile, I put a blog post in the chat room. My cool thing is another awesome thing, and it's not a Mac thing or an iOS thing. It's because 1Password is on at least on Windows. I'm not sure about Linux, to be honest.
If you do 1Password, I forgot what their brand name is for when you're using it just online.
I think it's 1Password X or 10.
Yeah. So you can use that with Linux, no problem.
Okay. Yeah. So 1Password has released a awesome new feature, and it is medical records. And I mean, as someone working in the medical software industry, and also someone who actually I just got a bunch of lab results dumped on me, and I was like, where do I store them? Like, I have PDFs here that I don't want to be out there. I mean, it's mm-hmm. medical information. I don't just want to drop it in like Dropbox or something and then it gets hacked. I was kind of thinking, like, where can I put that? 1Password to the rescue. They have added medical records to 1Password exactly for that reason. So I'm going to store, like, I'm going to put all my lab results and so on in 1Password. Comes with your 1Password for free. Like, nothing you have to do. Sure, you could have done it before with like notes and so on, but it's harder to find. It's awesome. And I'm actually looking forward to what they're going to do with that, because I think there is a lot of potential in connecting that to other systems and then importing the data into 1Password. So
that's awesome. Okay. So now I know it's in the update that installed a day or two ago, because mm-hmm. I hadn't bothered just to released. Look yet.
Just released a couple of days ago. I said, it looks really good. Like, I mean, from coming from someone who does this professionally, it does look really good.
Nice. Okay. Ian, what do you have?
I've got a couple of things. One, just because I spotted it while we were talking about the jetpacks, the chap Richard Browning, who invented the that particular thing we've been looking at, he's got a book out or coming out very soon. So that's on Amazon, Kindle, usual sorts of things. If you've got a papery book, if you want one of them, grab that. And I thought I'd do a TV one this week. And in the UK, I've been watching this thing called Saving Lives at Sea. It's brilliant. It's based on it's a Find the Wall TV documentary type thing following our RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. A series of volunteers will go out and rescue people in trouble at sea. So they've got body cams on, and they go out, and you quite often see them bobbing in very, very rough waters while rescuing some poor soul that's got blown away on a lilo, or got caught, or their fishing boats caught fire, was one the other night, or there was a historical, a historical schooner, like a tall ship, that was being sailed across from somewhere to somewhere else, and they ran into difficulties, and they called the RNLI out. They came out, helped them pump it out and work out what was wrong with it, and got them on again. And it's all staffed by volunteers. They have a very small full-time staff in some of the more troublesome spots, but generally it's people are volunteers, you and I. Sat at home, your beeper goes, and you'll run off and go and rescue someone from the sea. And if you've got VPNs and you're not in the UK, you can probably get to watch this via iPlayer. If you're in the UK, it's on iPlayer. It's great.
Very
fun.
Cool. All right. And my cool thing this week is a book. Andy Weir, the guy that wrote The Martian, his new book is out. And so this is his third book. And it goes back to the formula that worked so well for him with The Martian, which is the solo astronaut having to save the day. And in this case, it's the solo astronaut, and the day they're saving involves the future of all mankind. And I won't elaborate on that anymore because, you know, no spoilers. I'm not very far into the book yet, and it is very difficult to put down. It's pretty awesome. So it is called Project Hail Mary. And it's by Andy Weir, and it's available in hardback and paperback and Kindle and Audible. And I presume it's on the iBook store as well. It's just a really cool book. So it wouldn't surprise me if this becomes a movie at some point as well. All right. And we have made it to the end yet again. Mahler, where can people find you?
Slack room, Mahlerbiker on Twitter. That's about it really these days. I'm on Instagram, but I don't really post on there. Boring.
Well, I'm concerned to think what it is you would actually post.
It's
all right. Yeah. Well, you know, we don't need an international incident.
Let's say that you win all the editing.
All right, Patrice, where can people find you? And you're muted.
It's gone quiet.
I muted myself. That's why. Every week
here. I tell you what, it's great. Women when they shut up, that's great. Don't make him go. Don't make him come off.
Oh. Yeah, every week here on the Big Show, and I talk a lot, and also on the Mac Show every Friday. Everything I'm doing, you can find on thepatrice.com. All the social media links, and if you want to buy me a coffee or something. And my podcast is The Foodie Flashback, where I talk to interesting people about food and food-related memories. And that you can find on foodieflashback.com.
Awesome. All right, Ian, where can people find you?
You can find me in the Slack room, occasionally being helpful. Otherwise, I will be around... I said occasionally. Otherwise, you'll find me on LinkedIn, Ian Grant. Look for me there. Look for the word Convo and Ian Grant. You'll probably find me. That's mostly where you can see me. I don't do too much in the way of things. I'm on Facebook and other stuff, but most of my sort of business side of things is in LinkedIn these days.
Cool. All right. And I am on Twitter and Instagram. I am Jay Gamut both places. Also, I'm making some videos now. So if you go to youtube.com/JayGamut, there's kind of a pattern here. You can find the videos that I'm making. Patrice, your public service message about the iMore article was very timely because I need to edit together my video showing how to add your pronouns to Instagram. So that will be up online shortly. So go check out the videos that I'm making. And to that end, buy me a coffee and Patreon if you want to support the videos. I'm on both as Jay Gamut. Hey, thanks to all three of you for being here today. You absolutely rock. And this is just so much fun. I seriously look forward to the Big Show and the Mac Show every single week.
Me too.
And thank you to everyone that tunes in live and participates in the chat room. It's an absolute blast to have all of you here every single week. And to everyone that tunes in to watch or listen later, thank you for being part of this as well. All of you absolutely rock. And I'm so glad that I get to be a part of this. All right. So don't forget to check out the photo show. It's pretty awesome if you're into photography on any level or if you just want to learn more about it. And then we'll be back tomorrow for me tomorrow morning, Friday morning. I suppose for everyone else, it's actually Friday afternoon, you know, in the real world for the Mac Show. So looking forward to that. And we will see you then. And everyone have an awesome weekend.